Okay, we're beginning here with the Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Bet Amud Bet. The Mishnah says, Ir sheish ba'avodat kokhavim, a city which has avodah zarah in it, vayu ba chanuyot mu'utarot. And there were stores that were decorated, v'sheinan mu'utarot. And then there are other stores that are not decorated. Zayah masev Beit Shan. This was an incident that came up in Beit Shan, v'amru chachamim. Amu'utarot asurot. Those that are decorated are asur. She'ena mutarot. Those that are not decorated, mutar. You're allowed to exchange with them. Now Rashi over here explains the Mishnah, and then this brings up issues both here and later on in the sugya, which is, b'derach obdei kochavim, v'yotlehem yom shuk v'yarid v'yom edam. That it was a normal practice on the day of their holiday to have a marketplace or a sale that went on that day. So Rashi claims it was yom ha'ed, which already presents problems because you're not allowed to trade with them on the day of their holiday. That we established already. At the Mishnah level, it's both the Yom Ha'ed and the days before. Shmuel introduced the possibility that the days before would be precluded, but he still agrees that Yom Ha'ed is Asur. So Rashi now introduces the possibility that you're trading with them on their holiday itself. How can you justify such a practice? So Rashi says, "Im mishum denoseh v'noteh b'yom edam." If you think the problem here is, what about the first Mishnah that says you're not allowed to trade with them on their holidays? Hani mili zvune lahu. That's to sell things to them. Dilma mezavin le behema. Because maybe you'll sell him an animal. And then he's going to bring it to the avodah zarah. Inami derech lokeach liot sameach. Or a purchaser in general is happy with their purchase. And then he's going to go and give hoda'ah to the avodah zarah. Aval, the mizban minayu, to buy things from them, davar mitkayim, something that has shelf life to it, shari, totally mutar, the stam mocher atzuvu, because a seller in general is not happy. So Rashi over here introduces the possibility that the whole problem with Yom Edam is simply selling to them. Buying from them is not a problem on Yom Edam. The Balya Tosafot already commenting on this say, wait a minute, how could this be? First of all, how can you trade on Yom Edam? And number two is, what's Rashi speaking about over here? About the only one way or unidirectional problem over here. He says, V'nireh Rashi chazer bo, mashaya mefarish, on the Mishnah, on the first daf of Avodah Zarah, v'laseit v'lateit, hainu mekach u'memkar. That he translated, v'laseit v'lateit, was to do any commerce, transactions with them. So Rashi clearly seems to have backed away from that position. In addition, he says, how could it be that you can't purchase things from them? Because the Gemara said before on Daf Vav Amud Bet that you're not allowed to buy things that have a shelf life because he's happy to sell it. Now Rashi made it clear you can only buy things that are davar mitkayim. So Tosafot's question is not as strong from that perspective. But you look at the bottom of the Tosafot and he says, Vakech Perish Rabbeinu Meir. I don't know if this is Rashi's son-in-law Rabbeinu Meir. Dahalcha Mairi B'yarid Shasui La'niach Bo Meches. This is a yarid in which they let the taxes go. V'shalo B'yom Eidam Mairi. It's not on the day of their holiday. And therefore, if they're not decorated, there is no problem. So what the Balei Tosafot suggests is, listen, if it's a day of their holiday, then there's no trading. Doesn't matter who you're trading with, whether it's the decorated stores, non-decorated stores, you can't transact. Nothing goes on that day. Rashi, on the other hand, says it is their holiday. The decorated stores, you can't do that. The reason is because they take taxes from it, and the way that Rashi is describing it is that those that are mutarot basically dedicated a certain percentage of their profits or their sales to the avodah zarah. So if you trade with them, then you're going to end up, the money that you're giving them is going to support the avodah zarah. And that's why it's not allowed. That's what Rashi says. Ah, it's the yom etam. How are you trading with them? That's because you're not selling them things. You're simply buying from them things, and therefore it is mutar. Balei Tosafot say, Yom Edam, we can't trade with them on Yom Edam. That can't be what we're speaking about here. Must be that it's not a holiday. Ah, so then what's the problem? That the Mutarot give their taxes in and they pay to the Avodah Zarah. And that's why you can't trade with them. The others, you can trade with them because it's not Yom Edam. And it's got to be obviously more than 3 days before Yom Edam. But therefore you can transact with them. Amar Rav Shimon Lakish, Lo Shanu Ela Mutarot Beveret Behadas. That's only true if they're decorated with roses and myrtle. Dekamitane merecha. Because you are benefiting from the fragrance that comes from these items. Aval mutarot beperot, mutarot. If they're decorated with fruits, then it's fine. My time, Damakra, because the Pasuk says, Lo yibak miyadcha meumah min acherim. You're not allowed to take anything from the Avodah Zarah, not allowed to enjoy any benefits from it. So that's Nenehud Asur. You're not allowed to get benefits from it, Avam Mehaneh, but to give benefit to it, Shari is Mutar. So basically, what Rabbi Shimon Lakish says is, those that are decorated, if they're decorated in such a manner that when you go in there, the fragrance or the nice smell is going to give you Hana'ah from the Avodah Zarah, that's problematic. Because you're benefiting from the Avodah Zarah itself. Now it sounds like from this that the Vered and the Hadas over here were somehow used in the service of the Avodah Zarah, or were Takrovet Avodah Zarah that was brought to the stores to decorate them after they've been presented before the Avodah Zarah. The Baal Tosafot over here speak about the fact that we find other things where you don't worry about the smell of the items or getting benefit from it. Tosafot over here wants to differentiate between things that are ikrayu l'recha, things that their only purpose is their smell, versus other things where it's a side benefit from the object to get the smell. And therefore over here, where you have benefit from the hadas and the verit, where their only purpose is for smell, that would be problematic. But then, he says, then the Baal Tosafot go on to suggest, filo avi ikrayu l'recha, even if their primary purpose is not for smelling, shema yish lesor. Maybe we should make it asur. And now he goes through this. All the Isserim Shabbat Torah, when the Gemara says, if it's not done derech hanatam, you're not chayav, he says, that means you're not chayav, but isur ameyayika, there's still an isur to do it. B'shema, b'vodat kochavim, afilo lil kot nami loki. Because as far as to say that mipin by avodah zarah, maybe you should get malkot for it. Even though normally we wouldn't give malkot, by avodah zarah it's such a serious offense, maybe you get malkot. Midahava akile akerim, the lokin alayim ashalokader chanatam, shom lok tivabu achila. Since there's no achila written by kile akerim, but it's an isur achila and an isur hana'a, so in that case, any type of hana that you get from it, you are culpable. So too by avodah zarah, lok tivba achila, bedoraita lo betivrei kabbalah. The word achila is never used in the Torah with regards to avodah zarah. That means maybe any way that you get hana from it, then you will be culpable for it. So Tosafot, speaking to the severity of Avodah Zarah over here, says that this smell, or the benefits that you get from the Beret and the Hadas, are something that are completely off limits, and that's the problem here. Peirot, the problem is not the smell, the problem is that the profits are dedicated to the Avodah Zarah. But here, Reish Lakish makes a distinction. It says, the Torah restricts you from getting Hana'ah from the Avodah Zarah. It does not restrict you from being Mehaneh, giving benefit to the Avodah Zarah. Tosafot says, is that really true? We know later on, and the Gemara is going to say that you're not allowed to, when you are the adjoining house to the Beit Avodah Zarah, you're not allowed to pull back into your property because you give more space to the Avodah Zarah. You're not allowed to benefit the Avodah Zarah in any way. Reish Lakish over here says, Mehaneh Shari. Why is that? You can't do that over there, and over here, Reish Lakish gives you free rein to be Mehaneh, the Avodah Zarah. The Rabbi Givei Eger says he doesn't understand the question. The Gemara further on is speaking the Shita of Rabbi Yochanan, who disagrees with Reish Lakish. That's the halacha. Nevertheless, the Tosafot thinks that Reish Lakish has to square with that Gemara later on. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam Perish, the Vade Kol Meneh Asur Levad Mehocha, says that even Reish Lakish agrees, you cannot be Mehaneh Avodah Zarah. Here it's an exception. Mipnei Sheish Bota Anah Bizayon Levadat Kochavim. The benefit that you're getting over here is actually a denigration of the Avodah Zarah. She porea meches lefishenu machshiv al derek kochavim kolkach sheyasim atara b'rosho. He's unwilling to play along with the Avodah Zarah. You get an exemption from the tax. You will be freed of the tax if you do certain things that indicate you're worshiping the Avodah Zarah. Members of the club are free of the tax. If you're not willing to join the members club, then you have to pay tax. So yes, in the end, the money is going to the Avodah Zarah. Nevertheless, it's going through a mechanism that shows that you really don't believe in the Avodah Zarah. And that's why the Rabbeinu Tam says Reish Lakish is matter. That seriously narrows the scope of what Reish Lakish is saying, that you can be Mehaneh and be Matir, such a thing. So Rashi over here brings, which is an interesting Rashi. Rashi says the problem with dealing with these people with the decorated stores, when it doesn't smell, so you're not getting that fragrance and the benefit of the fragrance, the problem is that they are actually trafficking in the monies of the Kumrei Avodah Zarah. which is that the Kumrim give their money to these storekeepers to purchase and to do business with. And so your benefit that you're providing is because they are transacting and basically managing the money of the Kumrei Avodah Zarah. Others simply just say that there's a profit that comes out and you're going to pay taxes off that profit that comes from the sales there. But Rashi takes it a step further and says that's a situation in which you are actually trafficking in the monies of the Avodah Zarah. So it's basically the endowment of the Avodah Zarah or the Kumrim of the Avodah Zarah that they're working with trying to make profits for them. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu utarot beperot nami asur, decorated with fruits, it is also problematic. Kal v'chomer, it's a logical nehene asur. If you can't get enough from them, then mehane lo goshakei, giving them a benefit, the Avodah Zarah where you're giving hanah to them, certainly that should be problematic. If you can't get something which is quasi-intangible, getting hanah from the Avodah Zarah, then when you're actively biyadayim providing a benefit to the Avodah Zarah, seems like that should definitely be asur. Meitve, we have a problem, which is, Rabbi Natan Omer, Yom Shavodat Kochavim, Manechet Boat HaMeches, on the day that the Avodah Kochavim lets you off, or gives a tax-free day, or a tax holiday, Machrizin Ve'omrim, Kol Mishenotel Atara, anybody who takes a crown, V'yaniach Birosho, and puts it on his hand, Uberosh Chamuro, or on his donkey, Lichvod Avodat Kochavim, to honor the Avodah Zarah, to venerate the Avodah Zarah, yaniach lo et ha-meches, you get a tax holiday today. V'im lahav, ayaniach lo et ha-meches. And if not, they will not release him from the taxes that are normally paid over here. Yehudi shenim sasham, a Jew who is that place, mayaseh, he's in a catch-22 now. Yaniach, if he puts on the crown, or whatever it is there, nimsa nehenet. He is getting a benefit from it, and you can see in Rashi, minareach shelasavim shelbsamim. He's going to get the hana from the smell or the fragrance of the myrtle crown or the vered crown. Now, Rashi's statement over here is not as clear as you would think, because there's another hana. Real hana you get is when you put the crown on, is you don't have to pay the tax. So why doesn't Rashi say that? So Tosafot comes to defense of Rashi and says the reason Rashi didn't do that is because that's an indirect benefit. It's actually the crown itself, when you put it on and you smell it and the fragrance that comes from it, that is a real hana'ah that you're getting from the Avodah Zarah. On the other hand, the freedom from the tax or the tax holiday is basically you keeping your own money. It's your money. They were coming and trying to confiscate your money. In fact, now that you're released from the taxes, you just kept your own money. And so Rashi, according to the Baal Tosafot, says that that's not a hana'ah that you can declare as a hana'ah that you're benefiting from the Avodah Zarah. Other Rishonim argue on this sheet of Rashi Tosafot and say that, you can see that in the Rabbeinu Chananel, if he puts on the crown, the Rabbeinu Chananel says, Nimtza nehene hameches. He's getting the benefit of the tax that he doesn't have to pay. Rabbeinu Chananel clearly sees the problem as being the lack of payment of meches. Rashi and the Baal Tosafot disagree and say that is keeping your own money. It's just you're released from having to pay the tribute. That's not called hana'ah. It's almost like a indirect benefit that you're getting because you just are keeping your money and not paying the meches. The hana'ah is that you're smelling the myrtle or whatever the crown is made of. Lo yaniach, if you don't put the crown on, nimtza mehaneh. Then you are giving benefit because you're actually paying the tax, and the tax is going to the Avodah Zarah. Mikan amru, from here they concluded, Baal Tosafot suggests that this sounds like a knas, a nusevin otein b'shuk shel avodat kochavim, someone who is in this position and is transacting in the shuk avodat kochavim, behema te'aker, the animal has to be maimed in some way, peirot, ksut, v'kelim, your kavu, disposable items, fruits, clothing, kelim, they have to be put out to rot, ma'ot, ukli matechot, these are things that have duration to them, monies and metallic kleilim, yodichem, the Yam HaMelech. Just the classic solution here is you throw them into Yam HaMelech, because the Yam HaMelech corrodes everything, given the salt content in there, and that's why they disposed of kodoshim and things that they didn't want to get other people have a takala with. You threw them into Yam HaMelech, because nothing survives being in Yam HaMelech. Bezu ikur, and what is ikur? Aminasher parsotea min arkuva olamata. You take off the hooves below the knee. Tani mihat. From here, looking at this, we said, yaniach. If you put it on, nimsa nehaneh. Lo yaniach, nimsa mehaneh. That is very supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's position that both hana'a and mehaneh are problematic. It's a problem for Reish Lakish, who says mehaneh is shari. So I'm Rabbi Mishar Shev, Rei Davidi, Kasava Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Pelige Rabbanan alei de Rabbi Natan. Not a problem. The Rabbanan argued. This is Rabbi Natan Shita. The bright open as Rabbi Natan Omer. He says, the Chamim disagree with Rabbi Natan. Vanei damrei ke Rabbanan de Pelige alei. And I will agree with the Rabbanan who disagree with Rabbi Natan. Rabbi Yochanan Savar lo Pelige. Rabbi Yochanan believes the Rabbanan don't argue with Rabbi Natan, and therefore Rabbi Natan's position is accepted by everyone. There we have the Machloket. Just repeated again, just a question of whether you think the Rabbanan agree or disagree with Rabbi Natan's position. If they disagree, then you're going to obviously pass them like the Rabbanan, and that's what Reish Lakish does, and says, Mehaneh is Shari. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says the Rabbanan don't disagree with him, therefore Mehaneh is Asur. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan paskins, that Mehaneh is Asur. Tosafot over here has a very interesting statement over here in Kal v'chomer, where he speaks about the Yochanan Shita, that if you get hana'ah is problematic, then be mehaneh, giving value or hana'ah to the Avodah Zarah, is also problematic. He says, Katav Rabbeinu Baruch, Doto yarit shakumrim shel avodat kochavim lokhim bo meches min hamecher miyad. Problem, it comes up when the priest of Avodah Zarah collect their taxes immediately on sales that are done in this shuk. Imoto mechesu l'binyan avodat kochavim, if those monies go directly to the structures of the Avodah Zarah, Vovei Kochavim, Mifaresh, Kach, Viskum, Kach, Vekach, Vod Pashut, the Binyan of Dat Kochavim, Asur. And the seller says to him, here's the price for the merchandise, pay that, and then you have to add on, like how they have in the stores, you want to add a percentage for charity or something to that effect. That's what he's saying. He's saying, here's the price, and then you have to put on top of that another piece for the capital campaign, the building campaign of the Avodah Zarah. That is Asur. But he has here two qualifications which are important. One is that they're going to take it immediately, meaning that they're going to collect right away from these people. And number two is that he's delineating when he sells you the item, this is the underlying price, and here is what you're going to be giving to Avodah Zarah. But, va'afim lo yizkir lo l'binyan avodat kochavim. Even if he doesn't mention it's for the building campaign, el'achar shepiresh lo askum, amar lo ba'ot pashut, if he says that this is the price, and then you got to add on something on top of it, nirad asur. He claims that it is Asur. So his big point over here of the Rabbeinu Baruch is that the Isur stems from the fact that you add on something beyond the absolute price of the item. If you establish a price for the item and then they add on a tax on top of that, it's clear that whatever you're adding on top is going to the Avodah Zarah. And he says that he'd like them to state it in order for it to really be Avodah Zarah. He says even if they don't state it, it will be problematic. Because the fact that he didn't mention the building is because he knows he's Jewish. And that's why he's not mentioning to him that it's going to the building of Avodah Zarah, because he knows the Jew won't be so happy about that. So he tells him, hey, here's the price, and here, why don't you add a little on for the charity? He doesn't tell what the charity's going to, because he knows the Jew will get upset. But the fact that he delineated it separately, that's what makes it Asur. And then he says, Barav Rabbeinu Moshe Mikutzi, Katab B'Sifro, Kimi Amar Stama. Even if he says it's Stam, Va'od Pashut, if he doesn't specify the purpose of the money, you may not be restricted anymore, even when he delineates the extra price that you're giving. Because how do you know what he's going to do with it? Maybe he'll do something that doesn't end up in a Avodah Zarah. He'll give it to tzedakah. Really to tzedakah. He'll give a charity to the poor people. And there you're not restricted from adding it on. So if you go into a store and they're offering that, if you add on a little percentage on top and you give that to charity, they don't define what the charity is. Rav Moshe Mikutzi, the Bala Smak, wants to indicate that maybe that is mutar, because they're not defining what you're giving it to, and it might end up in the right place, or might end up being something okay. That might give you a heter. The other hand, Rabbeinu Baruch was much more strict about this. He says as soon as they delineate it separately, you can assume it's not going to the right place, and he's not telling you about it because he knows you're going to be upset, and you won't buy from him if you do that. So therefore, it's a sur. But both of them agree, and this is an important factor, is that there has to be a delineation separately, that it's not built into the price. I mean, that you're paying more because you're giving it to the tzedakah. As opposed to what would be indicated through this Balei Tosafot, if you're paying for it, and then the seller has to pay a tax out of that money, out of his own pocket. I mean, it's his profits. That may not be something that you would be responsible for. It's only when you're the one who's paying the extra amount to make sure that it ends up in the Avodah Zarah, it's your problem. But if you pay the regular price where you could get that price anywhere else, then it sounds like it's his problem that he's doing that, and you don't have to worry about it. So that's an important chiddush of the Balei Tosafot, because it really does narrow the scope of the problem here to when they're charging extra, and you're basically paying that fee that's going to go to the Avodah Zarah in the end. Now, the Gemara over here says that in terms of what you have to do to the animal is minasher parsota, that we saw back on Yud Aleph, on Friday's daf, that you have to take off the hooves or do something that will maim the animal in order to render it not useful anymore. Rashi over here says the same thing he said there, which is, you only can do a me'arkov lamata, about ikur shetitaref bo, if you're doing an ikur that's going to make it to a treifa, asur lasot kein beyadayim. You're not allowed to actively make an animal into a treifa, bebeima, afo pisha sura ba'ana, even though the animal is already a sura ba'ana. Now this Rashi actually makes the Rashi we saw before more difficult. On Friday's daf, we said for Rashi, maybe the reason he thinks there's an isur of doing ikor that makes it into a treifa is because of bal tashvit. Because you're actually ruining the animal, because now you can't eat it. Now you can't do certain things with it if you make it into a treifa. But that implies that it would be mutter bahana'ah, you just have to render it useless. But you can get enough from it. Rashi states clearly or unequivocally that it's even if it's a sur bahana'ah, you can't make it into a treifa. Where do we ever find an iser like that in the Torah? So this starts to raise even bigger problems for Rashi's interpretation. Again, the Balei Tosafot raised the same issue here. He says, the lo nira can appreciate the hell. So that's what it says. I think Rashi over here, his explanation is problematic. Just like I said back on Daf Yud Aleph, that his explanation was problematic. This is not the right explanation for why you can't make it into a treifa. Elachi kamar, dayo bikach. It's enough not to make it into a treifa. V'yachol liot shemutar b'ana. He says maybe even it's mutar b'ana. V'avgav dima'otu peirot v'chol inach asurim b'ana. All the other items that you listed here are asur b'ana. How come all of a sudden the animal will be mutar b'ana? K'omakom gav v'heima yachol liot tesagi b'knasa d'ikor. It's enough with the knas of maiming it. You don't have to go further and render it useless completely, and maybe you could get hana. The Balei Tosafot are the shita tam before, which is that the question here is achila or not achila, hana or not hana. He says in the end, maybe it is mutar ba'ana or is it mutar ba'achila? Just the question that you have to ruin the animal from its primary purpose, because then the person's going to lose money because he bought it for its utility. Now he can't have it or can't use it. And therefore, you've already rendered it useless to him, even though he could sell it off to get achila or hana. That's a significant degradation in the value of the animal, and that might be enough. That's how the Balei Tosafot deal with it. Obviously, the issue is the problems of tzar balei chayim and all the other issues that we dealt with on Friday's daf. But here, Rashi seems even to close some of the other options that we gave to explain Rashi. He says the whole thing's asur b'ana. It's asur b'ana, making it into a treifa makes it no less useful to you than it was before. It was asur before, now it remains asur. That's why the Tosafot opened up the possibility that it might be mutar b'hana. And now the Gemara continues and says, v'lo plige, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the Chachamim and Rabbi Natan don't argue here. Is that really true? They don't argue? V'atan yochim, v'yarid sholvdei kochavim, v'lochim hem be'ima abadim u'shpachot batim v'sadot v'kramim. Now you're allowed to go to these marketplaces of the Ovdei Kochavim and purchase from them animals, servants, maidservants, houses, fields, vineyards, v'kodev, u'maleh b'erkaot shelahem, and you're allowed to take it into their court systems, m'vnei shehu k'matzil mi'adam, because it's as if he's saving it from their hands. The Gemara will have to come back later on in the daf to discuss what exactly you're saving over here, but the basic idea is that we allow you to enter their courts, which we generally do not allow. We don't allow you to go into the non-Jewish courts because that is a veneration of their system and their courts and gives them kavod. And the requirement of the Torah, Ve'lo Mishpatim Asher Tasim Lifneihem, is a requirement that you bring it before the Jewish court system to a Beit Din and not take it to a secular court system, which in some ways denigrates the Batei Dinim and elevates the non-Jewish courts or their system. So generally, we'll not let you go in. In these cases, we allow you to go in there to get the stamps on the contracts, to get validation of the contracts, because otherwise, they're going to back out of the transaction. So, k'matzil mi'adam means that you're saving yourself, because when you go in there, they're doing yourself a tova in the long run, so they don't have questions or they can't come back and renege on the sale. The question that really arises over here is, how are you allowed to be in this marketplace at all? It says here, you can go to the Arid Shul of Dei Kochavim. Rashi on the Mishnah says, the Arid is B'yom Edam, on their holiday. How are you allowed to go there in the first place to purchase from them? Rashi answered on the Mishnah, and he's going to say the same thing over here. This is only a unidirectional transaction. It says, V'lokhim mehem. You're allowed to buy from them, and all the items listed here are things with shelf life to them. So that's mutar. According to Rashi, purchasing is allowed. And that's how Rashi solved the problem in the Mishnah. Same way he would solve it over here, is lochim. Balei HaTosafot explained that the reason you're allowed to go to the Yarid is because it's not on the day of the holiday. That's how Balei HaTosafot dealt with it. They said it is days before the holiday, and that's why you're allowed to go and purchase from there. There's another view within the Gaonim and Rishonim, which is Yarid, like we would think about it today, it's used today, the modern word Yarid, is a super sale, or like a huge market where the prices are unprecedented. And that's what it means over here, that Yarid Shel Ovdei Kochavim is a case where the prices, items, or sales will not be found again. And so therefore it's a unique opportunity, and if you don't take advantage of the opportunity, you would actually lose money because now you have to pay more for the items. So that's why you're allowed to go there, is because it is a unique opportunity, and you would be hefseg mamon if we didn't allow you to go there. So that's why you might be allowed to purchase these items in these markets, because you get unprecedented prices. You'll be governed by the rules that if they are mutarot, not mutarot, whatever it is that guides you as to whether it's a mutazar or not, but might be the permitting factor over here is the fact that it is a yarid, that it is a special sale. So one of those three different approaches is taken by the Rishonim in general to explain why you're allowed to even enter into these marketplaces in the first place. Then we have, Imayakohen, there was a great mitamei b'chutz laretz, ladun ula'ar'er imahem. When it comes to a Kohen in general is restricted from leaving Eretz Yisrael, Eretz HaTehora, to go out to chutz laretz, which is Eretz HaTmeya, even though it's only Tmeya mid Rabbanan, Takanat Chachamim, Gzerat Chachamim, they made Eretz HaAmim into Eretz Tmeya. Nevertheless, there is a rabbinic restriction against the Kohen leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to Eretz HaTmeya. The truth is, again, as I mentioned before, the Sefer Yoshua, they themselves call the land Eretz Tmeya when it's outside of the area of Eretz Yisrael. That has to do with Ashrat HaShchinah. The place where the Shechinah is the Eretz Torah. The Eretz Tmeya is the place that where the Shechinah doesn't reside. So the term Eretz Tmeya is used in a larger scope and before the Chachamim ever instituted it. All the Chachamim did was take that Eretz Tmeya and make it into a real tangible tum'ah that is going to affect you. But even before that, we have in Tanakh that the Eretz Amim is called Eretz Tmeya. And there is a restriction for a Kohen to leave and go into Eretz Tmeya because the Kohen has to remain Tahor. But here, it says he's allowed to become Tamei because it's a Din Derabbanan, and we allow him to violate the Din Derabbanan. There's a dispensation in order to adjudicate or to go to court with them to defend his position, his ownership position. Just like he's allowed to go out to Chutz Laretz and violate Tuma Derabbanan, Kach Mitamei Bebeit HaKvarot. He's allowed to enter into a cemetery. Well, cemetery would be Tuma Doraita. Right? This seems to indicate not only Tuma Derabbanan, even Tuma Doraita. Gemara interjects. Bebeit HaKvarot Sakadatcha, Tuma Doraita. Since when can you suspend a Din Doraita for a Kohen? Ella, Beit HaPras to be Derabbanan. It's a case of Tuma Derabbanan in Eretz Yisrael. The Beit HaPras is a field in which there was a kever that was lost. It's been plowed over, so we no longer know where the kever is, and we assume that the plow distributed the bones all over the field. And our fear is that if the Kohen walks there, he'll actually come into contact with an etzem kiseora. Etzem, the size of a barley seed, if you are nogea, you touch it, or you cause it to move in any way. Meaning that if you step on something and that causes it to shift in any way, that is a problem of tumato, right? For the Kohen. Because of that chashash, we don't allow a Kohen to walk through such a field, given that chashash. We don't worry about tumat oel, because tumat oel requires a certain minimum number of bones or structure of the body to be there in order to have tumat oel. That doesn't exist anymore, because the plow plowed over this and distributed the body into smaller pieces where you'll not have tumat oel. So in terms of Ohel, you can walk through there. So there's no Tuma Deoraita. It's a Chashash Midrabanan that you might come into Tuma Deoraita if you touch an Etzem Kisora, or if you shake an Etzem Kisora. In general, the dispensations that we use allow you to go through Beit HaPras are either if it is a well-worn path, that people have walked on it already. That means that the dirt has been compacted already, and therefore the Kohen will either see whatever is there, or it won't move anything because the dirt's already compacted. Or he has to get down on his hands and knees and blow in front of him, to make sure there's nothing in the area in front of him to have it cleared out. Those are generally the ways that we allow for dispensation in cases where we allow you to pass through. Here is also one of those cases where we're going to allow you to pass through. The Beit HaPras would say, Tuma Derabanan, because we seem to have a higher goal here, which is the preservation of what you purchased from them. So for that higher goal, we allow the Kohen both to go to Chutz La'aretz, as well as to go through a Beit HaPras Derabanan. Umetamei L'mol Torah V'lisa Isha. This dispensation is not only for securing your property, it's also to learn Torah and to get married. So that means a Kohen has a right to become Tamei Tumat Eretz Ha'amim, to learn, to get married, and here to protect his property, or what we other guys call Parnasa. Those three things are dispensations to let you leave Eretz Yisrael. The truth is that this dispensation is not only for a Kohen. The same restriction that applies to a Kohen to leave applies to everybody. You're not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for no reason at all. So here the Gemara gives you the reasons that permit you to leave Eretz Yisrael. Parnasa, Torah, Lisa, Isha. Those are the three things that allow you to leave. And we'll discuss this in a minute. What's the scope or what is the reasoning behind this? Those dispensations allow the Kohen to become Tamei. He has an additional problem. Not only is he leaving Eretz Yisrael, he's going to come Tamei Tuma Derabanan. So here we say that the Rabbanan suspended that Tuma in these instances and also permitted him to leave and anyone else to leave in these situations. When is that true? Bizman Shein Motzei L'Lumod. It's if he can't find a place to learn in Eretz Yisrael. Aval, Bizman Shein Motzei L'Lumod. If you can find a place to learn in Eretz Yisrael, then there's no right to leave. What right do you have to leave now? Limo Torah. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Afilu Bizman, Shemotze Limod, Yitamei, Kishen Adam Zoche Limod Minakol. Person only learns where they're happy. And even if he finds places to learn in Eretz Yisrael, if they don't speak to him, if he doesn't enjoy it, then he has a right to leave to go find a place that he enjoys learning and that he is successful in his learning. Rabbi Yossi says, it's not just about, is there an institution here or not an institution here? It's a question of whether you can learn and you're comfortable and you enjoy the learning at these places. If not, then you can go and leave to find that place. I'm Rabbi Yossi, Maseh B'Yosef HaKohen. There is an incident with Yosef HaKohen, whether this Yosef HaKohen is Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, who's one of the five Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. It's possible that he's the same individual. Shalach HaKohen Rabbo Litzidan. He followed his Rebbe would have been Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, to Tzidan, Lilmod Torah, in order to learn. Tzidan is northeast of the Kinneret, and considered to be Chutz La'aretz, which is interesting in itself. Rabbi Yochanan, Alocha, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yochanan says Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi. Now, if he says Alocha is like Rabbi Yossi, that means that he's familiar with this Braita. This Braita clearly disagrees with the previous Braita. The previous Braita says you can't trade inside of these Yeridim. You can't go into these marketplaces and trade. Here's a Braita that says, yes, you can do it. If that's the case, Rabbi Yochanan's familiar with the Braita that argues on Rabbi Natan. That means that he knew about the fact that the Rabbanan argued on Rabbi Natan and they didn't necessarily agree with him. The fact that he passed in like Rabbi Yossi in the Braita shows his familiarity with the Braita. So I'm a plege. From that you see that they do argue. So I'm a lecha Rabbi Yochanan, olam lo plege. Now they don't argue. Below Kasha. It's not a question. There you're talking about a professional trader by which the authorities are familiar with this individual and therefore they come and collect the taxes from him. They're going to get him on his taxes because they know he's transacting. Here we're speaking about buying from a regular individual, a lay person, and in purchasing from a lay person, you don't have necessarily a guarantee that they're going to get the taxes. The authorities are just not going to know because he's not a regular business person. And so they don't know that he's a trafficker in commerce. And so they don't go after him for taxes. Because this person is basically going to evade the tax, you're not subject to the problem. And so that's what Rabbi Yochanan says is the difference between the Braita is The first bright is telling about a case where professional sellers, professional traders are transacting where the authorities know who to go after and how to get their taxes. We are talking about individuals who come from all over and they sell there, but they're one-time sellers. They're not people who are there all the time. Therefore, the authorities don't know how to go and get the taxes from them. They don't have any system of taxing them necessarily. And so for that reason, it would be mutar. Right now, just to discuss the ability to leave from Eretz Yisrael, the Baal Yad Tosafot claim over here, and seemingly logically can make this claim, which is that the items that are listed over here, dafka b'hanach mitzvot, because these mitzvot and chashuvot, because they are significant mitzvot, major mitzvot, l'mo Torah, to learn Torah, shegadol tomu Torah, shmevili de maaseh. First, he doesn't know Torah, he's not going to know what to do. He doesn't know how to do the mitzvot. He's not going to have any understanding of what is incumbent upon him unless he learns Torah. So that is a significant reason to leave Eretz Yisrael. Isha nami, dichtiv, lo toru vira'a. We have a pasuk in Yishayahu, it says the world was not created to remain desolate, that there is a mitzvah beyond possibly pruruvu. There's a fundamental mitzvah, which is, that's the purpose of humanity, is to reproduce. And if you're not going to have a wife, then you're going to be in a serious bind, and therefore it's a significant mitzvah. The Gemara in other places calls it a mitzvah gadol. About the shar mitzvot? Well, other mitzvot are not included in this list. The Baal Yad Tosafot and the Gemara Megillah speak about the fact that Pidyon Shvuim, the Gemara there claims is a huge mitzvah. And he wants to know, why is it not included in this list over here as well? Pidyon Shvuim, you would think, is on the same level as Limud Torah, Lisa Isha. Baal Yad Tosafot says, Pidyon Shvuim, we're obvious. Everybody knows it's such a big mitzvah, because we know that it overrides any other consideration. And we sell anything to do Pidyon Shvuim. So Baal Yad Tosafot says there that it's a given that that's included in the items or dispensations to leave. And therefore, the permission to leave is in these unique circumstances. It doesn't give you a broad context in which to leave. It gives you very narrow scopes of when you can leave. Those have to do with these extremely important items. That's the Baal Yad Tosafot. But then he brings, Aval b'shilto d'Rav Achai. In the Shilto d'Rav Achai Gaon, he writes, Mifurash tanach tile. These mitzvot are lighter mitzvot. B'koshkein l'shar mitzvot sheim chashubot. Certainly other mitzvot that are chashub. First of all, it's very hard to understand the Shilto. All the commentaries mention that, where does the Shilto get that these are lighter mitzvot, like marriage and the motorah? Why are those considered to be lighter mitzvot? But that's what the Shilto says. The Shilto says that that's true of any mitzvah. It's not limited to these mitzvot. Be true of all mitzvot. Now, as you mentioned here and you noted, the Baal Yad Tosafot make a huge caveat on this, that you're only allowed to leave bedato lachzor. If your intent is to return afterwards, you can't leave on a permanent basis and stay there. It's one thing to go there to take care of whatever the matter is and to return, but if you go there and stay on a permanent basis there, you're in violation of the issur of leaving Eretz Yisrael. That has big implications, especially for the dispensation for Parnassa, which is one of those dispensations. If a person goes out for Parnassa and then stays there forever, they've now violated this restriction. You're not allowed to leave for Parnassa unless you intend to come back. And so Tosfot gives a very strong caveat on that, that Dato Lachzor is integral to the heter of leaving Eretz Yisrael. The Shevet HaLevi says that going out for business does not just mean for essential parnosa, but means for parnosa even beyond the essentials, meaning to make more money or to succeed in business. It still would be mutar. That seems to be from Rashi and other poskim that the Easter is only someone who resides in Eretz Yisrael, but someone who is from Chutz La'aretz to return to their place in Chutz La'aretz may not be as problematic. The Rashbam in Masechet Baba Batra says the restriction against going out of Eretz Yisrael is because he's mafkiyat momen mitzvot, that he loses out on the mitzvot atzvuyot baretz, and therefore leaving is a problem, and you have to justify that or get a dispensation to be able to leave all those mitzvot behind. As far as leaving Eretz Yisrael for other reasons, here we enumerated the reasons that you can leave, which include Limot Torah, Lisa Isha, Parnasa, maybe Pidyon Shvuim. What about other matters beyond that? What dispensations can you have in order to leave to Eretz Yisrael? So we have other instances where the Mefarshim bring down issues that would allow you to leave. The biggest question comes up about vacation. Are you allowed to leave on a vacation outside of Eretz Yisrael to go visit places that you can't see, obviously, in Eretz Yisrael? And you're going to visit them, but they don't have any of these dispensations. What right do you have to leave the Eretz Yisrael to go on vacation? So there are those, like the Shevet HaLevi, who are seriously discouraging of people leaving Eretz Yisrael to go on vacation, to leave Eretz HaKdosha. He speaks a little bit about places like Eilat that might be outside the borders of Eretz Yisrael. And there he reluctantly says that maybe you can go out because it's a short time, you're right near Eretz Yisrael, maybe over there you can go. If it's for no reason at all, you can't leave. But there's at least some tzorech, there's no gzeirah. He says, mitzvara, I would say that a tiyol is not considered to be a tzorech. If they leave for a very short time, the road play hateva to see the wonders of nature. So you'd say every sheet baruchu yesh makom litzadei daakel. Maybe over there you can be mekiel kumuvan tzarich lapech lochol kol lederach mitzvah. You have to try to change everything into a mitzvah in order to justify it. And on that, for bigger trips, he seems to indicate Rav Vosner that he doesn't think that there's any heter to leave Eretz Yisrael. There is a comment by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, where he disagrees with, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach about the din of sukkah, but that din of sukkah has application over here. And that is that there is a requirement on sukkot to be inside the sukkah. And so Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes there that the same way like by Eretz Yisrael, leaving Eretz Yisrael, you need a dispensation to leave, so too by the sukkah. The mitzvah is to be in the sukkah. You want to leave the sukkah, you have to justify your reason to leave the sukkah. Because the mitzvah is to live in the sukkah. So now you have to have a justification for leaving the sukkah. And that's what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says. You want to leave the sukkah. You have to go to davening. You have to go to this. You have to do this. Those are dispensations to leave. Otherwise, you have an obligation to be in the sukkah. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein disagrees with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He considered him one of his rebbeim. But he disagreed over here and said that the sukkah is not a prison. It can't be that the person feels imprisoned inside of the sukkah, and therefore he has to look for a get-out-of-jail card to leave the sukkah. A person doesn't have to feel like they are locked up in the sukkah. There's no mitzvah to be trapped. There's no mitzvah to be incarcerated in the sukkah. And therefore he felt that that was the wrong way to deal with sukkah, to say you're locked in unless you have a dispensation to go out. A person should want to be in the sukkah. A person should want to live in the sukkah. But you don't have to search for a reason to leave the sukkah. If you want to leave the sukkah because you want some air, you want some break from it, that should be mutar, because you shouldn't feel like you're trapped in the sukkah. In the same way, he says about Eretz Yisrael. Eretz HaKdosha is a place you want to be. It's a place that you should want to live and spend your time and not leave. But he says you can't make it that people feel like they're incarcerated in Eretz Yisrael, that they can't leave Israel. And leaving Israel requires a dispensation, because otherwise you are really stuck. That's not the type of feeling or the type of experience that we want the person to have. That's not a religious experience. That's like being jailed. And he says, for that attitude, he thinks is wrong about these items. And therefore, he permitted leaving for vacations to other places, because he felt like you don't have to justify it, because you don't have to feel trapped inside of Eretz Yisrael. Another thing he does speak about also, and this Rav Vosner already indicates, says if you go to Eilat and you're going to get some benefit and the person's going to feel better and come back with renewed energies, that there is some value to that. And Rav Aaron also mentioned that there is also a value to going on vacation. People, when they clear their heads and they go on vacation, it brings them a certain amount of hana'ah that allows them to be stronger, healthier, better when they come back. And therefore, there's justification. I know that I heard a story from Rav Yosef Yosef. When he spoke about his father, Rav Yosef, they were flying to Chutz La'aretz. They were on the plane to Mexico City. And his father came over to him and said to him, how did you leave Eretz Yisrael? Why are you leaving Eretz Yisrael? He says to his son, he goes, well, I'm coming with you. He says, I'm giving a shiur over there, Rav Yosef says. I'm teaching Torah, so that's why I can leave. What are you doing that you're leaving Eretz Yisrael? So he told him he has to prepare a shiur to give him the kola when they land. So on the plane, he had to prepare a shiur to give to the kola when he landed to justify his leaving Eretz Yisrael. And I know that was his practice. Yosef Yosef said that any time his father went down to Eilat, he would always have a shiur set up in Eilat so that he could justify leaving Eretz Yisrael. But you see, that attitude about leaving Eretz Yisrael requires a dispensation, or the reason you can leave is because you're going to teach Torah, learn Torah, but otherwise they would not permit leaving Eretz Yisrael. So the other reason would be kibud avim and family members that would also justify leaving Eretz Yisrael, which is actually gleaned from a gloss of the Magen Avraham by Dinim of Chol HaMoed, where the Shulchan Aruch says, "Hu shelo yatzah me'Eretz Yisrael d'chutz la'aretz l'tayel." The permissibility of shaving on the Moed when a person comes from a distant place is only true if he did it with a purpose or with a het there to leave. But if he left there till the Chutz La'aretz, which is not permissible to go on a tiyul or stop to go out there, then you're not permitted to shave when you get back because you left without permission. On that, the Magen Avraham says, "Imiyatzal arviach, you went out to make money. Olderot p'nei chavero, to visit his friend, shari, the mikrei mitzvah." That's called a mitzvah. And so that's a very important dispensation, which is to visit friends. Family would be considered a sibah, a reason enough to leave Eretz Yisrael, according to the Magen Avraham. And many folks can point out that with regards to the borders of Eretz Yisrael here, even though for Kedushat Aretz we use the Olei Bavel, or a smaller area to have Kedushat Aretz, with regards to Hadar Eretz Yisrael, the larger borders of Eretz Yisrael would govern in this case, and therefore, even if you're in the areas that are outside of Olei Bavel, you would still be considered or classified Hadar Eretz Yisrael, or not leaving Eretz Yisrael. That does have serious implications with regards to Eber HaYarden. For instance, if you believe the other side of the Jordan, or modern-day Jordan, is part of those areas of Eretz Yisrael and have Kedushat Aretz, then there are poskim, like the Radbaz, who would suggest that living there is considered to be living in Eretz Yisrael. So if you move to Amman, you would be in fulfillment of the requirement to live in Eretz Yisrael, or not to leave Eretz Yisrael, which we'll discuss in a different context when we discuss the Kedusha of Eber HaYarden. We'll send out the Mekorot on this, but it is a hot topic in terms of the permissibility of leaving Eretz Yisrael. Amar Mar. Now the Gemara goes back to Behemah Te'aker, that you have the right to maim the animal. Ba'ika Tzar Balei Chaim. Wait a minute, what about Tzar Balei Chaim? This is what we were asking on Friday's daf on Yud Aleph. When you're doing this Akira, why are you allowed to do this? What about Tzar Balei Chaim? Rabbi Amar Chmano, the Pasuk says, Etzusehem Te'aker. It says to Yoshua, when you go and conquer these areas, part of what you have to do in terms of the cherem of the city is that you have to maim the animals so they're no longer useful. So that here is the dispensation. Despite the fact that there's Tzar Balei Chaim, you have a pasuk that seemingly justifies this practice. Rashi says, Alma mutar lir dotan bekach. From this you see that it's mutar to treat them in this manner. Rashi does what say, I don't understand how you can extrapolate from the case in Yoshua to our case over here. The case in Yoshua is a case where Hashem is telling you, you do this. Well, if Hashem tells you to do this, then of course you do it. That's a dispensation because God told you to do it. Over here, what dispensation do you have to violate the Isur of Tzar Balei Chaim? And the Baal Tosafot double down on the question when they say that maybe probably Tzar Balei Chaim is Doraita. If Tzar Balei Chaim is a Doraita Torah principle, what gives you the right to violate a Torah principle in order to do something that is demanded by the Rabbanim? Again, in Yoshua, God's telling you to do it. So of course you can do it. Here, the Rabbanim tell you to do it. The Torah says, don't do it. How can you do it? We have a general principle, which is that you can listen to the Chachamim to be oker Dvar Min HaTorah, b'shev v'al taseh. If you do it passively. If you passively violate the Torah, the mitzvah d'oraita, that's fine. For instance, when Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbat, we don't blow the shofar based on the takana of the Chachamim. That takana is a shev v'al taseh. We're desisting from doing the mitzvah d'aseh based on the position of the Chachamim. That, the Gemara says, and many of the Rishonim quote, that you're allowed to violate and Isur d'oraita b'shev v'al taseh. Chachamim are empowered to allow violations b'shev v'al taseh. Over here, you're dealing with an akira b'yadayim, b'kum v'aseh. You're going to hurt the animal in order to carry out the din d'rabbanan. And so the Balei Tosafot over here make a suggestion. They have the same suggestion in the Gemara in Yevamot, where the Ramban and many other Rishonim disagree with this position. He says, "Yesh lamar v'ada yesh koach v'yadam lakor heicha t'niratam k'sat lakor." If the Chachamim come up with a serious reason to be oker the din d'oraita, they have permission to do it in certain circumstances. The Baal Tosafot quote as precedent the fact that you're allowed to marry off a woman be'ed echad. The fact that you're allowed to use one witness to declare the husband dead so that the woman is no longer not guna and can marry, says, look at that. Normally you need two edim by dinim of arayot. Over here we're allowing one ed. How is it possible that you could allow that in that situation? So the Baal HaHilul Tosafot over there say that the chachamim are empowered to oker davar min haTorah when there's a real reason for it, bikum va'aseh. That's the Baal HaHilul Tosafot's position, and they reiterate that position over here, that if you have some reason and the chachamim feel that it's imperative to do something like this, they can be even oker bikum va'aseh. The Ramban over there in Yevamot argues on the position of the Baal HaHilul Tosafot, and they say that Eid Echad is not only Neman Midrabanan, that Eid Echad is Neman Deoraita by Aguna, and therefore there's no Akirah Midvar Minatorah, and they clearly argue on this principle that you're allowed to be Oker Devar Minatorah Bikum Va'aseh. Those individuals believe, and the Ramban himself says it over here, what the Gemara is telling you is that Tzar Balei Chaim has limitations to it. Tzar Balei Chaim is not a blanket Isor that you can't do anything to animals. It's an Isor which says that you can't wantonly, unnecessarily cause pain to animals. But if there's a reason, then you're allowed to do it. The reason over here is the Chachamim say that there's going to be a takala. If you don't maim this animal, other people are going to benefit from either takrovet avodah zarah. We're going to see other items that are going to be mentioned here in terms of the issues that are restricted. They'll either be takala, or the Chachamim want a knas for people not to trade in avodah zarah. All those are sufficient reasons to say that it's not called Tzar Balei Chaim. Tzar Balei Chaim is where you have no reason to do it at all. And that's, again, as we spoke about on Friday stuff on Yud Aleph, the Heter, according to most of the Poskim and the Balei Shot, that say that animal experimentation is mutar, because over there it's for a purpose, even though there's pain caused. And again, as we mentioned there, that might be up to a point, which is that you have to minimize as much as possible the pain caused to the animal. You can't do it in a way that disregards the animal completely. But that is, again, a major head there within Tzar Balei Chaim, and that's how the Ramban reads it, as opposed to what the Balei Tosafot suggests over here, that you possibly oker a din d'oraita through a din d'rabbanan. Alright, now the Gemara continues and says, Amar, Vezu Ikur. What is considered to be Ikur? Minasher parsuta minarkuva ulimato. That is taking off the hoof from below the knee. Veramini, is that really the way that you deal with animals that are considered to be restricted? Don't we have other suggestions, which is Veramini? Ein makdishin, vein machrimim, vein marichim is manazeh. You're not allowed to be makdish something today. You're not allowed to be machrim something. Make it into a cherem. We have a machloket in Shas as to whether stam charamim are lebedek abayit or stam charamim are lakohanim. Rashi over here says, kasavar stam charamim lebedek abayit. This Tana clearly believes that the stam cherim goes to the mikdash, and that's why you can't do it today, because if you believe that stam charamim were the kohanim, then you could do it today and give it to the kohen. It wouldn't be a problem. So it must be that it is stam charamim lebedek abayit. And the Baal HaHilul Tosafot second that view of Rashi, Perish HaKunches, the Stam Charamim, the Beit HaKabayit, you're effective in. Rashi's right. That's the way you have to explain this right, though. Although there are some Rishonim on the periphery that suggest that even if Stam Charamim were to the Kohanim, it still might be a problem of Takala, which is that until it reaches the hands of the Kohen, there is a problem over here, and therefore you could even say it in that position. Vein Marichin, Aracha, or Erech, which is the tables that are laid out at the end of Sefer Vayikra for a person who commits to giving the erech of themselves or any other individual that's mentioned in the table. All of these things are problematic bizman hazeh. The reason being is that you have no way to discharge your obligation. The item is now kodesh, and you can't give it to the mikdash, you can't give it to the bedek abayit. So now the item is going to remain kodesh, and there's a high likelihood of takala, which is somebody benefiting from hekdesh, in a way that is going to cause them to violate the Isser of Milah, which is misappropriating things from Hekdesh and using them for your own purpose. And over here, that's what's going to happen. So we don't want you creating Hekdesh or creating items that are going to sit around and be a takala for other people. Vim dish vechrim verich. What happens if a person actually engages in this behavior and actually is matish, machrim, or marich? Behema te'aker. When it comes to an animal, you have to uproot it, maim it, take away its utility. So the Baal HaHilul Tosafot over here comment about the fact that we have a braita in the Gemara in Arachin that suggests that if a person gets themselves into such a bind where they're makdish something or they do something like this, that they actually can redeem the item. And even though redeeming the item is going to cause you the same problem, which is now that you have monies that are kodesh, and they actually might cause you a bigger problem because they're not identified as being hekdesh, then why should that be permissible? So what the Gemara there says, and this is based on a member of Shmuel, which is that you're allowed to be podeh, hekdesh, at below its real value in situations where the money is not actually going to end up in hekdesh's hand. So there are situations like by Maaser Sheni, which we use today in order to redeem Maaser Sheni. Since the redemption of the Maaser Sheni is not going to end up with you eating peirot in Yerushalayim, we allow for a pidyon that is subpar value. Or in essence, what we say is that any amount can remove the kedusha from the item and be poder. And that's what the Gemara in Arachin suggests from the Braita, which is that when you are makdish these items, you should redeem it with a small amount of money, and that obviously will reduce the takala, and then you can dispose of that money in a way that will not cause a takala. What the Bali Tosafot want to know is, why doesn't the Braita over here give the same suggestion? So the Bali Tosafot bring the Rabbeinu Tam, who suggests that the difference is that the Gemara in Arachin was speaking about land. By land, there is no solution like you have over here. You're dealing with metalkalin, disposable items, you can't dispose of them, and therefore there's a solution. That's why we don't allow you to redeem them, and we tell you to maim them, rid yourself of them, in order to solve the problem. Whereas over there, where you're dealing with land, there is no other option. Land doesn't move. You can't do anything with the land or dispose of it. The only way to deal with it is through pidyon. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that there is no machloket between the braitot. The braita up there is speaking about karka, and this braita is speaking about metalkalin. As you can imagine, many of the other Rishonim believe simply that the braitot argue. There's the braita in Arachin, and the braita here. The braita in Arachin says you can redeem it. The braita here says you can't redeem it. You need to rid yourself of it. Machloket a braita, and we paskin like the braita in Arachin. And therefore, that will govern our decision. Obviously, the big nafkamina is the halacha lemaisa today. According to the other Rishonim, the halacha is you can redeem it, and that's true of karka, and it's true of metalkalin as well. Anything can be redeemed in order to solve this problem. According to Rabbeinu Tam, only karka can be redeemed to solve the problem. Any other item would be subject to the rule of this braita, and you'd have to dispose of it according to the Rabbeinu Tam. So again, here the braita says, "Mikdish ve'achrim ve'erich be'ema te'aker, perot ksut ve'kelim irkovo, fruits and utensils." You have to let them rot. Obviously, as Tosafot notes over here, when you're going to let them rot, you have to put them in a place where they can rot and people aren't going to come to a takala. And as we saw before, when it comes to items that have duration to them, coins and metallic utensils, you take them to Yama Melach to dispose of them. Tosafot also notes here with regards to Yama Melach that requirement is only when you haven't crushed them or if you haven't pulverized them. But if you've already pulverized the item, you can then just throw it into the river because that will disperse the item and not be useful to anybody. The reason you have to take it to Yama Melach is because the item is still intact. And therefore, throwing it to the river is not going to help you because somebody will pull that out of the river somewhere else and then there'll be a takala. So Yama Melach is if the item is still intact and you need to dispose of it. If you, again, have crushed it, pulverized it, then you can throw it into a river to dispose of it. Vezu Ikor, and this is the problem that we're raising with this, Gazar Gemara before defined Ikor in the Braita as being Minasher Parsotea, that you remove the hooves of the animal. Here it says, Ezu Ikor, Noel Velet Befanavi Meta Me'ela, that you lock it up in a pen and let it starve to death. Here, obviously, the benefit of locking it up in this place is that it's a Sheva Altaseh, which is that you are passively causing the animal to die, versus the case of Minasher Parsotea, where there's an active involvement in causing the animal to be then disqualified. Amar Abaye Shani Otam. Over there it's different. Mishum Bizayon Kodoshim. Because otherwise it causes a Bizayon to Kodoshim. As Rashi says over here, Diamar Te Aker. If you say to cause it, maim it in some way, Eino Meta Mehera. Doesn't die so quickly. Nire Bizyonal is Man Meruba. It's around for a long time. So first of all, it doesn't solve your problem of Takala because it's around for a long time. Number two is, it's something that looks like you're being mefazeh, the kodeshim, in the fact that you've now maimed something that was otherwise kodesh, and you're letting it deteriorate over a long period of time. And for that same reason, it's problematic for kodeshim, is exactly why we want you to do it to the behemah avodah zarah. Because if it's a bizayon to kodeshim, and we don't want you to do it, then if it's Avodah Zarah, we want it to be a Bizayon Avodah Zarah, and that's the reason to do the Akira of Minashir Parsoteh by the Avodah Zarah, versus the case of the Kodoshim, where we want to reduce or limit the amount of Bizayon Kodoshim. Now Tosfot over here raises a serious contemporary issue, which is Ein L'tmoa al Bechor Bizman Hazeh. How do we deal with a Bechor Be'ema Bizman Hazeh? Bechor Be'ema is Kodesh, is given to the Kohen, and then it has to be put on the Mizbeach, and the only way to release it from being put on the Mizbeach is for it to get a mum. But you're not allowed to actively put a mum in the Be'ema. So now you have Bechor sitting around, which is a serious issue. So then, Tosfot says, by Bechor Bizman Hazeh, why don't we treat it the same way, lock it up, have it starve and die, rather than waiting for it to get a mum, which could lead to a huge takala by the Bechor. So he answers, Da'adim atzrikhan ocho mishum dek nasa u shiktish al chinam. A Bechor shu kadosh me'ilav lo yado ba'ak dusha in the console el yamtin at shibo bo mum yukho bo mumo b'shum diya. Why can't he solve the problem by putting a mum into the animal before it's born? You're not allowed to put a mum into a behemah bechora once it's born because it's already a bechor and has kedusha. But in utero, if you cause a mum to it, that's fine because the kedusha only happens when the animal is born. So you could have done something to solve the problem, and you didn't do it. Why don't we penalize you for not taking care of it? Because what it says, if you didn't do that, there's no reason to penalize him. That's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy way to solve the problem. And therefore, we're not going to penalize him if he doesn't do that. Again, it's more of a shevi al taseh. He's not actively violating the restriction against bringing in kedusha. It's something that happens by itself. And for that reason, we're not going to penalize him. The Rosh Mishnah actually adds on an additional answer here with regards to the Bechor, which is, Bechor has a solution, which is if it gets a mum, it becomes chulin, and then you can give it to the Kohen. So why would we allow you to be nichnas the kippah and have bizayon kodeshim with regards to the Bechor, when the Bechor has a solution to its problem? And therefore, that's why we don't treat the Bechor the same way we treat other kodeshim. Although the truth is that we deal with this issue today in a different manner, which is that if you have co-ownership with a non-Jew in the Bechor, then there is no Kedushat Bechor. And therefore, we're mafkia the Kedushat Bechor through bringing in a non-Jew into the partnership in order to avoid the problem of Takala. Now, that's with regards to a Bechor. What about Maiser Be'ema? Maiser Be'ema is something that you have to be makdish by counting the animals, and every tenth one is Kodesh. And then you have to bring it up to the Mikdash if it's a Tamim. If it's a Baal Mum, then you can eat it yourself. And if it's a Tamim and there's no Mikdash, you have to wait for it to get a Mum. So Baalei Tosafot say, well, Maaser Be'ema is a problem of Takala. And Alma, from that, you would suggest that there is no Maaser Be'ema today. And then the Rabbeinu Tam challenges that based on the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, where it sounds like he took off Maaser Be'ema even post-Korban. Tosafot proved that he must have lived post-Korban when he was a Gadol. And how could it be that he's taking off Maaser Be'ema post the Korban? The Baalei Tosafot give a number of answers, one of which is, it was the executor of the estate that was doing it prior to the Korban Abayit. Second is, Inami lo nitbat lumiyad ad achar Korban kama shanim. The bitul of Maaser Sheni, or of allowing for any of these ekdeshot, was not something that happened immediately, but rather over time post the Korban. And to that, we actually have evidence of that. We have from the Minagei or the Halachot of Eretz Yisrael, that seems to be there for many hundred years after the Korban HaBayit, that they were still being Mafrish Maaser Be'ema, whereas in Bavel, they had stopped that much earlier and instituted a Takana much earlier. So the practice does persist in Eretz Yisrael for a very long time with Maaser Be'ema. This is the Baalei Tosafot suggesting that it didn't happen as fast as we thought. Over here, the Tosafot doesn't bring any other reason, but in other places in Shas, the Baalei Tosafot suggests that the Maaser Be'ema that he was paying was actually not Maaser Be'ema to Hashem, but rather Maaser Be'ema was his taxes that he had to pay to the government or to the king, and that it doesn't mean Maaser in the sense of the Maaser that we would think of in the Torah of Maaser Be'ema. Maaser means the taxes that he had to pay to the authority, and was just demonstrating how wealthy Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was, which is the context of the Gemara in which this is written. So now the Gemara says, V'nishchate mishkat. Why don't you shech the animal? Rashi says right away, what do you mean, how do you shech the animal? Animals that are going onto the Mizbeach, if you shech them outside the Mikdash, you're chayav karet for shkutei chutz. Rashi says, that's not a problem, because the items that we're speaking about here are items that are consecrated for their monetary value to the Mikdash. So shechting them outside of the Mikdash is not shkutei chutz, because shkutei chutz only applies to something that could have gone in the Mizbeach, and you shechted it outside of the Mikdash, that's shkutei chutz. So therefore, Rashi says it's not a problem. The Baalei Tosafot disagree with the Rashi and say that the Gemara here seems to indicate that we're speaking about items that would go on the Mizbeach, not just items that go to Berek Abayit. And therefore, the Kain Perish Ri, the Kodshei Mizbeach Hayri. We're speaking about here even about Kodshei Mizbeach. Ubezman hazeh in chayav shochet chutz mechar shein ra'ur lebiat petach o moed. By Tosafot say, the same reason you would say Kodshei Berek Abayit are not subject to shkutei chutz. Because Kodshei Berek Abayit can't be put on the Mizbeach, so there's no shkutei chutz. Today too. If you have an animal that's Kodesh and it can't go on the Mizbeach because there is no Beit HaMikdash, then there's also no shkutei chutz. Basically what the Ri says is, shkutei chutz is not applicable today at all because there's no possibility of bringing it to the Ol Moed, to the Beit HaMikdash. In the absence of your ability to do that, there's no shkutei chutz. We need to do it outside of that context. And that's the Gemara's question over here, that you should check that even if it is Kodesh Mizbeach. Or, in the end, the Baalei Tosafot are willing to entertain what Rashi says, that it's speaking about Kodesh Perek HaBayit, but in the context of the whole Braita, which is that it's speaking about Kodesh Perek HaBayit and Kodesh Mizbeach, and then he's explained to you why you can't do it by Kodesh Perek HaBayit, because of Kodesh Mizbeach, that the Gzeira Otu, Omar says, Otu Behuli Dei Takala. How does that solve your problem? You've just changed the possibility of what the problem is. When the animal's alive, you can misappropriate it by using it for your plowing, for riding on, or carrying things on. Now you check that you have the same problem. People might come to eat it, and that'll be a problem of takala. Although the truth is that you've actually shortened the duration of the problem. The animal's alive for a very long time, that problem can persist and be a problem that people forget about it. The animal's checked it and it's for its meat, the meat is going to go bad after 3 days, and therefore it does limit the amount of takala you can have. But nevertheless, there is still takala. Gemara says, but the shavya gistera, just cut it in half, meaning that kill it in a way that's not shchita, so it doesn't make it kosher, and there's going to be no achila associated with it. So now you don't have a takala of the animal being around, you also don't have a takala of achila. Gemara bai amakral, the pasuk says, nitatzem et mizbechotam, lo tasun kein Hashem Elokeichem. You have to destroy the props of the Avodah Zarah, the mizbechot, the altars, and all the things that surround the Avodah Zarah. And then afterwards, the pasuk says, "Lo tasun kein Hashem Elokeichem." That which you're doing there, you should not do to God. And we discussed the pasuk many times about the juxtaposition there, about how to read those psukim, because it has implication in how you parse them. The Gemara here parses it in one of the two ways that you could, which says that whatever you're doing now, which is destroying all those things that belong to the Avodah Zarah, that you may not do to Hashem. And that's what you're doing over here because you are rendering something useless that belongs to Kodesh, and that is a violation of Lo Tasun Kein Hashem Elokeichem. Rav Amar Ripnei Shenireh K'Matil Mum B'Kodeshim. It looks like you're putting a mum in the Kodeshim when you kill it. Mar says, Nireh, mum alyo. It's not like looking, it is. You're putting a mum into it. Ani mili bizman shebeit ha-mikdash kayam and the chazila krova. That is, in the time of the Beit HaMikdash is around, where you could put it on the Mizbeach, there is a restriction against putting mum in Kodeshim. But here, where there is no din of Akrava, because it can't get out on the Mizbeach, there's no problem of putting a mum in it. So, in essence, what we're saying is the Issur D'Oraita no longer exists, because, as Rashi says, it's Tamim Yul Ratzon Akriv, that the reason it has to be Tamim is so that you put it on the Mizbeach. And if you put a mum in it, you're ruining it from going on the Mizbeach. But that's only true when you could put it on the Mizbeach. When you can't put it on the Mizbeach, that Issur D'Oraita disappears. And therefore, we're only dealing with a din d'rabbanan, and that's what it means, nireh. It looks like you're matil mum in Kodeshim. You're not actually in violation of matil mum in Kodeshim, because that din d'Oraita doesn't apply when the Beit HaMikdash is not around. So the Gemara challenges that and says, even if it is not roi the Mizbeach, who says there's not a restriction of putting a mum in it? You put a mum into an animal that already has a blemish in it, even though the animal was disqualified already from his back, there's still an additional restriction against putting a mum in it. Wait a minute, a baal mum may not it itself be ra'ui the mizbeach, but nevertheless, its value can be exchanged. I mean, you sell the baal mum, And the value that you derive from that is then used to pay for a korban. So even though it may not have inherent kedusha that can go on the mizbeach, nevertheless it has kedusha that gives it monetary value. Over here, the animal has no value to it because you can't put it on the mizbeach and you can't exchange it for money and then put something else on the mizbeach because there is no mizbeach. And so over here, the animal is completely meaningless or useless with regards to Kodesh. That's both in the ability to put it on the mizbeach, as well as the ability to exchange it for money and then use that money to purchase something to put on the mizbeach. And for that reason, there's only an Isser Derabanan of being Matil Mum in Kodoshim. And that's why we don't want you making it into a gistera. And the truth is that this sheet of Rav over here drives the Tosafot to say that the Gemara must be talking about Kodeshim Mizbeach, because otherwise why is there a restriction about being Matil Mum in Kodoshim? That's only a restriction the Gari made Kodeshim Mizbeach. That's not a restriction the Gabe Kodeshim Berekabayit. That's what leads the Bayit Tosafot to disagree with Rashi's interpretation. But according to Rashi, it's very difficult to understand what Rav was doing over here. And even according to the second explanation of the Bali Tosafot, Rav was talking about Kodshei Mizbeach, and then from Kodshei Mizbeach, he creates a Gzeirah to Kodshei Bedek Abayit. But for Rashi, who thinks that the whole thing is about Kodshei Bedek Abayit, why is Rav speaking about a restriction against putting a mum into an animal? So there's some who want to try to solve that problem by saying that it's a case where he was Matish Tmimim. The Bedek Abayit is a case where it's an animal that doesn't have a mum that is maktish to Bedek Abayit, which there is a restriction against. We'll get to in Kodoshim. You're not allowed to make an animal that doesn't have a mum into a Kodoshim Bedek Abayit and not Kodoshim Mizbeach. But that's the situation in which then they will use that animal to get on the Mizbeach. Even though they can't use it directly, they will exchange it out, not to Chulim, but exchange it out to get on the Mizbeach in a different manner. And therefore, putting a mum in it would have impact, even if it was Kodshei Berek Abayit. So, Ashkei Rabbi Yonah the Rabbi Eli, the Kaya Pitcha de Tzur. So, Rabbi Yonah found Rabbi Eli was by the entranceway to Tzur, to Tyre, Amalek, Tani. Beima Teaker. By the Beima, you ruin the animal or maim it. Eved, Mai. What are you doing with an Eved? If you purchased a slave in this marketplace, how do you deal with ruining, quote-unquote, the Eved to the point where it's now rendered useless to you? With regards to the animals, we maim them. With regards to the objects, we throw them out, we destroy them, we do things that ruin them. What do you do with regards to an Eved? Eved is solo komi boile. When it comes to a Jewish slave, that I'm not asking about, because there you have no right to do anything detrimental or negative towards the Eved Yisrael. Ki kamai baile, Eved ovoid kochavim, mai. If you buy an Eved Oved Kochavim, can you be Pogeya in him in order to carry out the Knas over here? Amalei, Maikami Boilach. Why do you even have a question by a Goy? Tani Oved Kochavim Vare Behemadaka Lo Ma'alin Velo Moridin. When it comes to Oved Kochavim, or those that are shepherding Behemadaka against the restriction of the Chachamim to graze Behema Daka and Eretz Yisrael, because they destroy everything inside and make it impossible to have a yeshuv. And as Rashi notes over here, that the Roi Behema Daka in Yisrael, Behem Gazlanim, or in Kovdei Kochavim, they have the same status as an Oved Kochavim. Lo Malin, if they fall into a pit or a cistern, we don't take them out. Lo Moridin, but we don't actively push them in. So you see there, you don't have a right to actively injure individuals, even an Oved Kochavim. So if that's the case, how can you have a question here with regards to an Eved, Oved Kochavim, with regards to what you do to him? So Amalei Rav Yirmi, Amalei Rav Zerak, Tani, Lochim Behema, Mehem Behema, Abadim Ushvachot. Says in the other Braita, that you're allowed to buy from them animals, Abadim and Shvachot. Eved Israel, Odilma, Afilu, Eved Oved Kochavim. When you're purchasing from, in the other Braita, these items, and we say over there, Harihi, Kimatzil, Miyadam, that it's as if you're saving them. What exactly are you saving this Eved from? Stavre the Eved Yisrael. Sounds like in that Braita, talking about a Jewish Eved, because the Eved Oved Kochavim, the Maimi Boile. What exactly is Matzil Miyadam? What exactly are you saving them from by bringing them or purchasing them in that case? If it's an Eved Yisrael, then you're actually saving them because you're bringing them to be under the ownership of a Jew rather than a non-Jew. Ki'ad Rabbe, number of Yishim Ben Lokesh, Afilo Eved Oved Kochavim. Even in Eved Oved Kochavim, you're allowed to buy, according to the Chachamim, B'nei Shemachniso, Tachat Kanfei HaShchina. Because you're bringing him under the wings of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, as the Baal Tosafot note that an Eved Kenani that is under the ownership of a Yisrael Adon has a Chiyuv and Mitzvot, Kenashim, like women. And therefore, you're bringing him under the Kanfei Ashkina, and there's value to that. You're trying to explain here what Matzil Mi Adam means in all these cases. What does it mean that you're saving the animal from the goy? Now, if you're talking about property in Eretz Yisrael, that makes sense. You're purchasing property in Pnei Yishu of Eretz Yisrael. That's Matzil Mi Adam. When you're speaking about an Eved Yisrael, that's Matzil Mi Adam. Eved Ovid Kuchavim, you're now saying Matzil Mi Adam is that you bring them Tachat Kanfei Ashkina. How are you going to apply that to behemot? Ela mishum mi'utayu. The reason is that if you purchase their possessions, you're reducing their wealth in a sense. Again, this goes back to the attitude in that day, which is the selling of possessions was considered to be negative or a reduction in the person's wealth or stature. Rashi says, medal galanu lead to a deterioration and cause them to become poorer. And that would be the advantage over here because you're taking away the capacity of both the Avodah Zarah to do Avodah Zarah as well as to stay in the land of Israel. And therefore, if they're selling you items, your purchasing of them is actively causing a diminishment to them. And so over here, that's the same din. That means that by Behema, by Eved Kenani, the reason that you are purchasing them, it's considered to be Matzil Miyadam, is because you're wasting away their assets. By purchasing all the assets, they're going to have nothing left. On the other hand, the other opinion says that bringing the Eved Kenani is not Mi'utayu, because an Eved Kenani causes you to have to expend money to feed him and take care of him. So it actually can reduce your possessions, the Baal Tosafot say, not the possession of the Ovid Kochavim. He's saving money when he gets rid of the Eved Kenani. And so that opinion believes that the reason for Eved Kenani is not Mi'utayu, but that you're bringing him Tachat Kanfei Ashkina. But everybody has to agree with regards to the Behema that it is Mi'utayu. Rabbi Yaakov Zavon Sandala, Rabbi Irmiya Zavon Pita. Yaakov purchased a sandal from one of these markets, and Rabbi Irmiya purchased bread. Amalei Chad Chavrei. So one of them said to their friend, Yatma, you orphan. Orphan in the sense that you don't have a Rebbe, you don't have a teacher. Avad Rabbah Chachi, your Rebbe did this, that you're doing this? Amalei Idach. So the other one responded to him, Yatma, you don't have a Rebbe? Avad Rabbah Chachi, your Rebbe did this? Itavayu mi balabayit zavun. Both of them purchased it from a balabayit. And each one of them thought that the other party had purchased it from a professional merchant or a professional trader. And as we saw before, Rabbi Yochanan differentiated between purchasing from a balabayit where there's not going to be any tax paid, so there's not a problem of mehaneh, versus buying from a professional trader where they are going to tax him and therefore there's going to be a problem of mehaneh. Dama Rabbi Abba b'Reid Rabbi Chiya b'Abba lo shanu v'lokeach min atagar v'shach le'michsa minei Abba v'lokeach min balabayit lo shach le'michsa minei mutar. And that's the same distinction that Rabbi Yochanan brought on the previous Amud to explain the stira between the Braita of Rabbi Natan and the Braita that supposedly is of the Chachamim, to say that they're speaking about different incidents and they don't really disagree. Just a question of who you're purchasing from. Now over here, the Baal Tosafot raised an serious issue that all the Rishonim discuss, which is, how is it possible that Rimriya purchased bread from the non-Jews? There's a problem of Pat Akum. Why isn't he restricted by the din of Pat Akum? The Baal Tosafot over here give a number of answers. The first of which is, Yishlamar, the Ma'ir Makom, Shein Plat Der Yisrael. It's a case where there's no Jewish bakery in the area, and therefore there's no choice. You have to buy from the non-Jew. He wasn't purchasing it for himself. He was purchasing it either for his animals, or he's purchasing it for his Eved Oved Kuchavim, who also is not governed by the restriction against Patakum. And therefore, he bought the Patakum not to eat it himself, but to give it to others to eat, who were permitted to eat it. Although, if you look at the Rabbeinu Chanano, he says, Biyom Edam, Rabbi Yirmiya Zavan Pita, which is the gersa that we have, and others say that he purchased a house or he purchased something else that was not bread, and that obviously would solve the problem because then it wouldn't be a purchase that involves Pat Akum. The other thing the Baal Tosafot would ask is, Don't we have a restriction independent of this that you're not allowed to buy davar she'enu mitkayim? Not allowed to buy something that has shelf life to it because it'll be holei chamoda. Again, selling is a problematic. Purchasing from them, we said, is fine. It's davar mitkayim. But davar she'enu mitkayim is going to be happy they got rid of something with a ticking time bomb because it has a short shelf life. So how could he buy bread from them? The Bible goes on in the end, answer that bread is something that moves quickly. It has high turnover and it has high demand to it. Therefore, he's not worried about selling it. It's not considered to be a davar she'enu mitkayim. He says, if it is a davar mitkayim, because it moves off the shelf so fast that you don't have to worry about its shelf life. And that's why he was permitted to buy it, even though it technically is a davar she'enu mitkayim. So Rav Abba Breda Rav Chiya comes and qualifies that statement of Rabbi Yochanan and says, Il malei haya Rabbi Yochanan hazimne batra dekoshak le'michsa. If Rabbi Yochanan was around today in a city where they collect taxes for the Avodah Zarah, he would restrict it even from a balabayit, because today they collect taxes not only from the professional traders, they also take it from the balabatim. Ella inu echizavun. If that's the case, had Rabbi Yirmiya and Rabbi Yaakov purchased it? How can you justify what Rabbi Yaakov and Rabbi Yirmiya did? Because Rabbi Yochanan would agree today that even the balabatim are subject to the taxes, and you can't purchase from them either. They purchased it from a balabayit who was not a regular attendee of the market or not someone who resides in this area. What he's saying is that sometimes a balabayit can have the same status as a professional trader. A balabayit who is regularly attends these marketplaces or lives in that location, then he's easily identifiable and the authorities know who to go after in order to get their taxes. On the other hand, if it's a person who's a visitor or one-time seller in the market, or someone who doesn't live in the area, who they don't know how to go after for the taxation, that's the type of balabayit that is permitted to purchase from. And that's who Rabbi Yirmiya and Rabbi Yaakov purchased from. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Gimel Mudbet.